I will do everything necessary and anything possible to defund Obamacare.
He got everybody worked up, all the far-right folks.
House Republicans should stop letting Ted Cruz set our agenda.
He's not going to be able to prevail, Ted Cruz.
This law is not worth causing a shutdown over.
We're not going to allow anyone to inflict economic pain on millions of our own people just to make an ideological point.
I can't win this fight.
People like Ted Cruz, who have been really, as far as I'm concerned, carrying out a fraud with the people.
Only you can win this fight.
Well, the public battle over a government shutdown and Obamacare continues today. And let's get right to our brain trust for more on that. Esther Arma is a political commentator and playwright. Victoria DeFrancesco Soto is a professor at the University of Texas and an NBC Latino contributor. And Peter Sutterman is a senior editor at Reason Magazine. Thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thanks,
so, Peter,
Mara.
I want to start with you. At last night's Congressional Black Caucus dinner, the president lit into Republicans for their actions. Let's take a listen.
We have gone too far. We've overcome far darker threats than those. We will not negotiate over whether or not America should keep its word and meet its obligations.
Peter, has the president engaged in enough of this kind of rhetoric, countering the Republican narrative that all of his initiatives are bad for the country? And at this point, is it too little too late?
Well, I don't know that the president has to do a whole lot here to prevent Republicans from prevailing in their quest to defund Obamacare. It's a really odd kind of situation in which Republicans are pushing this, but there really isn't an endgame. Even if you're a critic of Obamacare, even if you don't like it, it's really hard to figure out what the end strategy here. There's kind of an element of the fantastic in which Republicans say, let's defund Obamacare, even though we don't have the votes. Even though the Senate is not going to agree to this, the White House is not going to agree to this. President Obama has been very clear on this. And so, you know, the question here is not so much, I think, whether Obama could or should be doing more, but what in the world are Republicans doing? What are they thinking here?
And Victoria, the bill to fund the government and defund Obamacare is in the hands of the Senate now, where it's expected to fail. But Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz this morning had a message for his Senate colleagues and House Republicans. Let's take a listen.
Senate Republicans, it's now our turn to unify, to stand together with House Republicans. And then the next step, look, this may end up going back to the House, and I hope and fully believe the House will continue the fight.
Victoria, is Cruz going to own this if it turns into a disaster and doesn't work at all in the way that he's hoping it will?
Mara, he's absolutely going to own it. I think he already has put his stamp on it. But I think that when we're talking about the incentive here, it's a longer-term incentive. So I disagree a little bit with Peter in that the end game for the Republicans isn't necessarily defunding Obamacare. They know that's not going to happen, and they know they will eventually come around and fund the government. I think they have their eye on the 2014 midterm election because there are a couple of very tight Senate races, especially with four moderate Democrats who know that if they vote to support Obamacare, that they may lose their seat because of that. Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, you got Mark Begich in Alaska. So I think that the eye is here. They know that this is just rhetoric, but they're pumping up the base so that they come out in force in 2014.
And Esther, you were nodding. Is this really all about individual political survival?
I think it's a combination of that, but I also think we're at the point where President Obama's rhetoric needs to be matched with a strategy by the Democrats to inform the American people about the ways in which Obamacare is going to serve them. Because I agree with Francesca, the end game is actually keeping an eye on elections, 2014 in the short run, 2016 in the longer term. And the trouble is, with Cruz and his fellow crazies racking up the that kind of cacophony of nonsense around defunding Obamacare, which is, by the way, now law in this country, what you don't have is the equivalent of the American people even understanding what Obamacare is. And so what you actually need is not President Obama's continued rhetoric. We have heard that. It's the strategy on the ground so people can understand how Obamacare can serve them so that come 2014, they have something real and tangible that they can hang on to say, well, hang on, this serves me. So this political strategy didn't just fail, but this is a political rhetoric that wanted me, my family, my community to not have access to a health care, which they already have.
So, Peter, what do you think of that? When it comes to the communication strategy, if you will, is that what needs to happen? Do we need to have more voices expressing the opposing point of view when we hear so much from the right about why Obamacare they think is going to destroy the country?
I think that conservatives are not doing themselves any favors here, and you can see that even within the conservative, within anti-Obamacare activists, within the Republican Party, there are a lot of conservatives who are actually concerned that the Cruz defund strategy will hurt Republicans in 2014, that an extended shutdown, which is in fact what a number of the activists pushing this strategy are hoping to get to, will actually backfire and will hurt Republicans and will cost them seats in 2014.
And Esther, before we go, I just want to switch gears quickly. You covered Africa for the BBC. You produced a documentary in Kenya. As we see this terrible crisis still unfolding in Nairobi, I'm curious as to what your thoughts are this afternoon about that.
So just firstly, my heart goes out to all those people who are still on this kind of 48-hour now standoff. There's a couple of things that are important to say about what's happening in Kenya. That Westgate, which is the mall that is where the gunmen are holding people hostage, is in a district called Westlands. And Westlands is a moneyed space. And so you're talking about a population that is part of the tourism economy. And the tourism economy is the second biggest economy in Kenya. What is important to note that had this happened, for example, in somewhere like Kibera, Kibera being the biggest slum in Kenya, in fact, Africa's biggest slum, there would not be these national, global headlines and this kind of sense of unity around Nairobi. So we're watching global terrorism understand that the targets are about the hierarchy of life. And so you're looking at American lives, British lives. British have a very important relationship with Kenya, post-colonialism, inter-independence. Of course, we know President Obama, his roots are in Kenya, although he's a different tribe than the Kenyan president. And so I think it's important to understand the geopolitical reality and the way in which the hierarchy of life is being measured.
Yeah, and we will certainly continue, of course, to follow this developing story. As we mentioned, it's still unfolding.
Thanks so much.
And our Brain Trust will be back with us later in the show. Victoria, Esther, Peter, thanks. Don't go far. We're going to talk to you more later in the hour. A memorial service for the 12 people killed in Monday's mass shooting at the Washington Naval Yard will begin in about an hour. Right now, we're back with our Brain Trust. Esther Arma, political commentator and playwright. Victoria DeFrancesco Soto, professor at the University of Texas and NBC Latino contributor. And Peter Sitterman, senior editor at Reason Magazine. Thank you all for coming back. Now, Victoria, I want to start with you. President Obama will address today's gathering later this afternoon. But last night, while speaking at the Congressional Black Caucus dinner, the president again made an impassioned plea for reforming the nation's gun laws. Let's take a listen.
As long as there are those who fight to make it as easy as possible for dangerous people to get their hands on guns, then we've got to work as hard as possible for the sake of our children. We've got to be ones who are willing to do more work to make it harder.
Victoria, why is it still so difficult to sell gun reform legislation in this country?
Mara, I think the scope is at issue here. I think at the federal level, we just have too much divisiveness between Republicans and Democrats. I think the real movement, if you want to see gun reform, needs to start at the state level, because we know states have such different gun laws. I mean, ranging from California, that's the most restrictive in terms of gun laws, to Arizona being the most liberal, where a 17-year-old can carry an open weapon. So what I think we need to see is, like what we saw in Colorado and in Connecticut, is the state legislatures taking action. Obviously, in Colorado, there was a response to that with the legislators being recalled, but at the same time, we see the legislation sticking. All politics is local, and the same holds for gun law. So I think we need to start small and eventually go up to the federal level.
Now, Peter, the National Rifle Association says we don't need new gun laws to fight crime. Wayne LaPierre, the NRA's executive vice president, said tougher enforcement is the key. Let's take a listen.
I'll tell you what the NRA is for. Interdict incarcerate violent criminals, get them off the street. Interdict people that are having mental problems, get them into treatment. Enforce the federal gun laws. If there's a drug dealer with a gun in Chicago, 100% of the time, federal law, Eric Holder, prosecute him.
Does he have a point, Peter? Is this really an issue of creating new laws, or are the existing laws good enough as long as they're enforced adequately?
Well, when it comes to future gun control legislation and thinking about that and movement on that, you know, it's really hard to figure out any particular gun control proposal that's gotten any traction so far that would have made a difference here. And so, you've got somebody who not only passed a background check, he used a shotgun, and he also had passed a security clearance check with the U.S. government. This is a guy who had secret clearance and had passed that background check. And so, in terms of thinking about what sort of gun restrictions, what sort of gun control legislation could move right now, it's really difficult to use this as a jumping off point. And I think that's a big part of the reason why Harry Reid has said that he doesn't have the votes and is not going to be moving gun control legislation anytime soon.
And then, Esther, Chicago has been one of the hardest hit cities when it comes to gun violence. At least 20 people have been shot in that city since Friday. Today's Sunday. So let's take a quick listen to what Mayor Rahm Emanuel had to say about that.
We cannot allow children in the city of Chicago, and we will not allow children in the city of Chicago to have their youthfulness, their optimism, their hope taken from them.
Now, we tend to look to legislation to solve problems like this, like endemic gun violence, but should we really be focusing on some of the root issues like joblessness and poverty, some of the things that tend to breed more violent neighborhoods?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a combination of things. I think the cancer is always this idea that the mass shooting, the response is always, well, there's no single piece of legislation that would have prevented that. But what we know statistically is the majority of gun violence is not from that individual mass shootings. Because Rahm Emanuel's words, we will not allow Chicago's children to have their youth taken from them to be subject to this kind of violence. We are allowing that. That's exactly what we are allowing. And so there's no question. Raz Barakri Newark asked for gun violence to become a public health issue so that there are a range of strategic measures that could be thought about, that could be employed in order to stem the tide of violence. So I don't think it's about any one kind of mythic response that's going to end all gun violence, and I think that creates a paralysis that is dangerous. I agree with Francesca, all politics is local, and so a range of local strategies can help deal with this, but that's not to say the paralysis from our politicians is acceptable, and that's what we've seen. And so there's this idea that we can keep having the merry-go-round of the same conversation about what would or would not have worked. Children are dying whilst politicians are prevaricating and politicking about legislation.
Right. And Victoria, quickly, I'm going to let you get the last word on this. You know, a lot of political action groups against guns, such as Mayors Against Illegal Guns, they've had very little success in turning public opinion towards new gun laws. Why do you think that is?
Well, again, I keep coming back to all politics is local. So let's take folks here in Texas. They don't like seeing a movement led by Michael Bloomberg. You know, what is a New Yorker telling Texans what to do? Where you need the action is at the grassroots level. You need people in their own communities, in their own neighborhoods, cities coming together and clamoring for this. You can't have outside forces because people will just shut off and not listen.
All right. You're going to have the last word on that. Esther Arma, Victoria DeFrancesco Soto, and Peter Suderman, thanks so much for joining us. And that does it for us. Thanks for watching this Sunday afternoon. I'll be right back here at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for coverage of the U.S. Navy Yard Memorial. And Craig Melvin, my friend, will be back in this chair next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. But first, Disrupt with Karen Finney is up next. Don't go anywhere and have a great evening.